Show.
That's my open?
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford.
That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion.
Bradfo Show. That's delicious.
Show episode 107. We are rolling. Promised that we would be. Start out with Mookie Betts a couple weeks ago. Went to Brian Bannister, which got rave reviews. One of the most popular podcasts we've done in a long, long time. And now we go to a member of the Bradfo Show, Ring of Honor. That is Mike Napoli, former Red Sox Mike Napoli, who just happened to be, he says he was in town to do Ness and pregame. I say he was in town to do about his 18th episode of the Bradfo Show. Once again, he delivered the goods. Always good. Always good. Every single time he's good, because you know what? It's just a conversation with a guy who went shirtless down Boylston Street. That's all it is. This is a pretty good one. Of all the Mike Napoli ones, this was right up there. I'm going to say this was number two of the 18th. Two. So there was 16 or 17 worse than this. That's how good this one was. So I hope you enjoy. You know, listen to it this weekend. Listen to it while running. Listen to it whenever you want. Thanks to the fine folks at Lord Hobo for helping us do this. Always good to swing on by to their place in Woburn. Boom Sauce. We're going to be shouting Boom Sauce from London Tower coming up in a week or so. So that's going to be very exciting, spreading the word of Lord Hobo. For now, we're spreading the word of the Bradfo Show. Enjoy. Listen, as I just told you, you appearing on the Bradfo Show for the 18th time just doesn't happen by accident. I think this is God's plan to have you be here. You're doing work for Nesson, technically, but really, I think it really, this why you were led to this moment right now, because you were jonesing for a Bradfo Show appearance.
I mean, as soon as I walked in this door, we locked eyes. So, I mean, it was meant to be.
What's
on this show again. So, I mean, I told my agent to get me a chance at being on a some kind of broadcast or pregame, postgame to see if I can actually handle this gig and see what's next for me in my life.
You nervous? Oh, by the way, in case people don't know, by the time they listen to it, they'll know. But you're doing pregame, postgame for Nesson for the first time. Yeah. First time ever you were on TV.
Right.
So are you nervous?
To be honest, not really yet. I'm pretty sure as soon as the lights hit my face.
Why?
I might be a little bit, but I mean, isn't that just normal?
Why
I'm going into something that I've not even thought about.
You've
doing.
Sat there. You sat at your locker, and people put lights on you, a camera on you, and you've talked.
No, I'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as long as people don't put me on the spot or anything, I'll be fine.
Here's the best rule of thumb: if Rob Bradford can do it, you can do
right.
it.
All right. Yeah. True.
And by the way, the eyes locking. That's for 3 years that year, right? The minute I walked into
I'm still waiting for my T-shirt. By the way,
that's false.
Huh?
You have a T-shirt.
Where is it? Well, you gave me.
I have a picture of you holding
a 4X.
Yeah. Well, I was anticipating retirement.
Actually, you know what? I haven't tried on a suit for a while, and I'm a little more thicker. I had to go to the mall and find a shirt
if
that
you,
fit my neck.
If you get to the moment where you fit into that T-shirt, because admittedly it was a little too big, then yeah.
That's going to be a problem if I do fit into that.
In fairness, you gave me a Party in Napoli shirt, and I think it was a girl's extra small.
Yeah, well, I mean.
I motivated. I was motivated.
I wanted you to be able to fit in so you go and work out.
Yeah, like as Pedroia said, if you aren't showing the nipple, you aren't trying.
Right.
So anyway, congratulations on your retirement. Last time I talked to you, last time we communicated, I texted you. I was on the bus ride, on the bus to Santo Domingo, and I texted you, are you retiring, right? Is that right?
That's great.
You're sitting there, didn't want to impose on you because you were both having a good time at the David Ortiz golf tournament, and you said, I don't know, we'll see, and then like literally 24 hours later, I'm retiring.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was up in air, really. I wasn't really convinced that I wanted to retire.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
It literally was.
I could see
it was dwelling, on everything in my life. So I finally made the decision 24 hours later that you know what, my time is done with baseball. My knee is messed up. I don't think I'm gonna be able to go through this and play anymore.
If I went up to you at any point and I and I put you under the truth serum for any of those 3 days.
You know, you can blame it on my agent. He's like, do not tell anybody.
Oh, really?
So, I mean.
You tried that before. It didn't work.
Put it all on Brian Grieper.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's his fault.
So do not tell anyone until, like, how did you get it out there? Didn't you tweet it out or something? Instagram or?
I mean, that was a while ago. I don't remember what I had for breakfast. I remember
where I was when I found out. Here's the thing. I was driving to Pedroia's house in Arizona.
Oh, really?
And you made me pull over to a Starbucks to post I think that the headline was a great headline. It was the King of Boylston Street was retiring. So you're welcome. Was that tough? Seriously, was
I actually, tough? You know, I was walking in the city today, and I was with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, that's exactly where I was shirtless with a cig hanging out of my mouth walking down the street right there. It was right by McGreevy's. I remember that.
What an aphrodisiac that is for her.
Unbelievable. She's like, she laughed. She loved it.
She didn't know that? But
no, she knew. She's seen pictures, but she didn't know exactly where it was. I showed her pinpoint.
You didn't do like role play? You didn't do like simulated again? No?
No, not yet.
That would have been
great. Maybe by the end of my trip.
Oh, absolutely.
Sunday night, maybe. You know, after the day game.
Absolutely.
A lot of time in the city.
That has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
Absolutely.
You never know.
Well, anyway, congratulations. So, well, again, it wasn't a tough decision?
It was a tough decision. I mean, first, when I did it to my knee, I mean, you know, it was hard for me to find a job somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, especially in this market.
Yeah. I mean, doing that, and at first I'm like, you know what, I'm going to come back. I'm going to, you know, get out there again and do it. And then just going through the rehab, I was kind of having trouble with stuff. And, you know, sitting down with my family, I knew it was an opportunity to go home and be around them a lot more. So, I mean, I was, you know, set in stone with, you know, I'm ready to retire. I had a good career. You know, I set myself up for life. I made a lot of friends, you know,
yeah.
A lot of great people around me. So, I mean, I knew it was time to, you know, hang it up and
It must have sucked. It's a classic Mr. Captain Obvious statement of all time. But it must have sucked when you hurt your knee, because you were coming off the year, right? You hit a lot of home runs, but you had the hand thing that was messed up, right? So you come back, and you still have a lot of playing in you, right? And because the market makes you sign whatever, the minor league deal. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't have the knee thing happen, you probably...
I would have been in the big league somewhere. I mean, I remember I was just talking with the guys upstairs about, you know, I hurt my knee and then 4 first basemen go down to the big leagues.
Oh, really?
You know, so it was just crazy. So, I mean, I probably would have been in the big leagues and maybe even playing this year if I didn't do that.
You'd probably be playing for these guys.
That would be amazing.
Right?
Yeah,
you ever come close? No? No, I don't think so, right?
What?
To coming back here?
No.
I don't think so.
No,
as much as we try.
As much as I would love to.
Yeah.
But no, I never really came close. I mean, you know, I had opportunities with Texas and Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's, you know, not to blow smoke, but like that says something that, you know, those teams, those people like knew, like Texas, you kept coming back to Texas for, you know, well, there's a reason why. Mm-hmm. You know, you left your impression. So good for you. And I'm sure if there was a fit, there was really never a quite the right, like, circumstance, the opening here. But I'm sure if there was, you would be the first call because of the impression you left.
I mean, it's wherever I've gone, it's family to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I want to get to know my teammates. You know, I want to know them off the field. I wanted to get the best out of them at any time. Just something I love. I mean, it's just... I never went into something just about myself. You know, I always wanted to make people better, even if I had to go out of my way, out of my routine to, you know,
right,
baby somebody or get on somebody,
yeah,
or whatever it took. You know, it's what I love, and I think, you know, it kind of got around to where, you know, I'm a person that cares and is going to try to get the best out of anybody in anything. You know, I still do it to this day. It might not be on the baseball field, but people around me.
Well, that's how I am, too. That's why I'm going to get the best out of you on the pregame show. But, you know, that segues into one of the things I want to talk about. And this will be good because we're a few hours away. So this is sort of like your warm-up. This is like your limbering up. And when you talk about getting the most of everyone, one of the things you said to me one time, it might have been like in your last year you were struggling, And you were always perceived as, like, sort of a leader on the team. Like, you know, leadership comes from all corners of the clubhouse. But you were struggling. And you said something to the effect of, well, it's hard to really tell other guys, you know, hey, get your shit together when my numbers are what they are, mm-hmm. right? That's always a tough thing. Whereas, you know, we were just listening to Alex Cora. Alex Cora and, like, even, like, Gomes or those guys, they were sort of, okay, your priority is to do this mm-hmm. and not necessarily hit 30 home runs or hit 300.
Yeah.
You know, so that is must have been a little bit weird in terms of the clubhouse dynamic for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Because you were a leader on this team.
Yeah, and I don't think it was more of a... I mean, I would get in someone's... Can I say ass?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd get in someone's ass if I had to.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really that real big vocal leader. I always went and did it by example. You know, just mm-hmm. play the game the right way always. Care about your teammates and take yourself out of the equation. It was always about winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... You know, I think the more you ingrain that in people, the more they relax and do certain things. Because if you're good enough,
yeah.
things are going to work out. If you're good enough in baseball, things are going to work out. So if you do the team thing and put everyone, you know, before you and worry about winning, it all just comes together.
But that's what you guys did in 2013,
yeah,
right?
I mean, well,
starting in spring training.
And it's hard to explain what it was, but I don't think there can ever be that kind of personality.
Hmm.
Different personalities that gelled so well together.
Yeah, because
we were a heavy veteran, first of all.
Yeah, well, that's, yes. You were all in your third, or near 30 or in 30s.
Young
yeah.
guy. It was Will, and then, you know, Bogey came up yep. later. But that's the thing. Everyone checked their egos at the door when we came into the clubhouse, even, you know, off the field. We hung out off the field. I've never seen so many people at a dinner
yeah.
on the road.
Yeah.
You know, you have 25 guys at a dinner.
Yeah.
You know, now you know.
And you made Millbrook pay. It was weird.
Yeah, I mean, credit card roulette, you know. But the amount of trust we had in each other and just how we gelled together was unbelievable. I don't know.
So what happened the next year?
And you know what? I mean, here's the thing. I can kind of put it to maybe the early struggles here. You know, you lose certain people. You can't. Last year, the Red Sox had almost a perfect year.
Yep.
A perfect year. It is so hard to duplicate what they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lose one of the best closers in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the back end of the bullpen, who is established, you know, that comes in and gets saves all
mm-hmm.
the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got a younger bullpen. You know, mm-hmm. this year guys are going into newer roles that, I mean, it's hard to come into a game and get the last three outs.
And also, it's human nature to think your shit doesn't stink. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not, listen, there are good guys and they work hard and they're trying to do all the right things. But to think that it's like going to just, hey, we're going to play exactly how we did 5 months ago or 6 months ago.
That's hard. It's too
hard.
You
didn't
do
it in 2014 and you had other stuff going on, like, you know, the Lester's contract, you know,
yeah.
contract situations mm-hmm. to deal with, stuff like that.
It's hard. I get the chills, you know, because how perfect their year was. I can imagine their clubhouse was a lot like ours mm-hmm. in 2013. Probably how close they were. You could see how it was on the field. You know, you got Cora coming in the first year,
mm-hmm.
changing some stuff around, getting a new vibe in. You know,
mm-hmm.
guys are upbeat. They're, you know, it's a fun time. You know, I remember that when I was younger, you know, I got traded from the Angels. You know, I was kind of tippy-toeing around, you know, in the mm-hmm. Angels organization and that, you know, mm-hmm. with Soch and the clubhouse,
right.
you know, not knowing. And then I went to Texas and it kind of, it was new for me, and I was able to, you know, open up. You know, my personality came out mm-hmm. and be the player that I was on the field, and I kind of blossomed. So I kind of see that, you know, Cora coming in here. It's new.
Right. But that's the weird thing is that, listen, you know, it didn't work out with John Farrell, right,
mm-hmm.
as it went on. But there, you weren't here in 2012, but there was absolutely, I'm not saying that remotely the same type of manager,
mm-hmm.
but there was that the right guy at the right time,
mm-hmm.
right, element to that thing. You guys were a veteran team, as you said.
Right.
He was a manager, was probably made for that, where, you know, with Cora comes in, it was, these guys are in their 20s.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing how young this
yes.
team is.
Still.
And yo,
yeah.
100%. Yeah. I just talked to Bogey, and I said, Bogey, how old are you? He said 26. I almost spit out my drink. I'm like, no way. I didn't get to the big leagues till I was 26.
You said, Bogey, how rich are you?
Yeah, I did. I said, I need a loan. And he laughed. You know, he's
But he's like we just talked about, compared to what he was, like you can even tell this year.
There was a time that me and Pedroia, when we were playing, when he was real young, he was still raw.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big kid. And we both looked at each other. And this was the time to where you could still put the second baseman into the green monster.
Right.
You know, breaking up double plays.
Yeah.
And Pedroia was probably like, I'm going to get killed, you know, because he's so raw. And he hadn't been through those repetitions and games of how to attack balls, how to get, you know, a ball quick to a second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
And I credit, you know, Butterfield, the work he did with Bogey.
Oh, yeah.
It was day and night. Like, overnight, me and Pee-wee would look at each other and be like, this is a totally
different player. Didn't think
player.
He was going to play shortstop.
No, everyone. But the way he worked and the way he learned McDonald.
I was going to say,
McDonald
that was
here,
a month.
Late in the year, McDonald was there to, you know, teach him things, work through the ball, always having his momentum going towards first. You know, it was amazing the turnaround and how quick it happened to where he was a big league shortstop. And me and Pee were like, oh, he's going to be a good league shortstop. And he is. And he's consistent. He's had amazing years. He checks in every day. He's in the lineup every day. And he's one of the he's just his personality. He's such a good kid. He cares, and that means a lot. You know, when you know your teammate care and they care about you, it brings it a long way.
Well, sure. I want to go back to the leadership thing because, like, you obviously helped Bogey at that point. I talked to Porcello the other day because Cora said after the game the other night, Porcello, Sale, and Price are the guys. We have a problem, we call it into my office and we take care of it. Immediately, I was reminded of 2015. You know what I'm going to talk about? I think you were in this group. Farrell calls in to the office. It's Hanley, Pablo, I think it was you, Pedroia, and Ortiz.
I don't know.
In early June 2015. So anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if I was in that one.
I think you were.
I was?
Because I looked at an old article.
Maybe I was. Obviously, then.
Well, you were probably, if you were.
The message wasn't received.
If you were there, you probably were thinking, why am I here with this guy and that guy, this guy? But the point is that, you know, I was always raised at the whole leadership thing. Like, the C, the cap, like, this is what no one should ever have a C in baseball because leadership comes from all corners of the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. It's the starting pitchers. It's the relief pitchers. It's the utility guy. It's the star, blah, 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 blah. It's the bilingual guys.
There are different areas of – each guy is going to look up to somebody in their area. So, say, starting pitchers. You know, usually you would have a guy that – is their ace. Your ace. It's usually number one.
Yeah,
you know,
like Lester.
Or the bullpen.
You know,
the bullpen. You have someone in there that leads and shows people by example of how you go about your business and, you know, things you can do or you shouldn't do or you know, how to attack things. And then you have, you know, position players.
But there's the rare occasions there's an alpha. Like there's Ortiz ultimately.
Yeah,
maybe not even so much when you were there, but certainly when his last couple of years with these guys.
Well, I mean, you're talking about probably – could be a Hall of Famer with 22-23-year-olds.
Exactly.
Awing at,
it's like Brady.
They walk in and they see Poppy. You know, it's like, oh, my God. Like,
everything,
I'm playing with Poppy.
Everything
right
has to be passed through with one guy, right? Like, it's Tom Brady, I'm sure it's the same way. Right. My point is that when he says it's about three starting pitchers, to me, that's a rarity. Like, that's a rarity that you're – and there's other leaders. Like, J.D. Martinez leads in his own way.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's sort of a rarity that these guys are being – am I wrong? I hope I'm not wrong because that's what I wrote today.
You know, I haven't been in the clubhouse or been around.
Yeah, but you have been in clubhouses.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Have you ever had a team where the starting pitchers were, like, the top dog leaders?
No, not really. I don't think so.
There you go.
I was so fortunate, though. I came up in the Angels organization to where I had some legit leaders and guys that played the game the right way.
Well, yeah. And these guys.
And that's where I learned from. But that's where you for me, you know, taking the veteran out of the game is kind of hurting the young kids in a way.
Right.
Because they don't have anybody to show them a way and show them the right way to play.
That's why you.
And you got kids coming up a lot younger that haven't been through everything or seen everything in the minors. You know, when I came up to the big leagues, I was pretty darn close to seeing everything. I had the bats down in the minor leagues. I played a lot of innings.
Yeah.
I learned from those mistakes in the minors. So when I got to the big leagues, that was already played in my head.
Right.
I wouldn't have to make those mistakes up there.
Yeah, no, I that's true. I mean, that's the importance. And I think that it's weird because you need the guys, but you also you don't want to force a guy. Like, I'm not going to name. I mean, they've tried to get guys to say, "Hey, you know, we think that this guy can be a leader." The problem is,
I don't think you could say, "Hey, you need to be a leader."
No, but here I'll give you an example. Is that Chris Young, the outfielder, who was also you sitting there trying to get you to admit you're retiring down in Dominican? You probably told him, but not me. But Chris Young comes here. He was a lead. He helped the younger outfielders, and I think that was part of his role. But the problem was when he stopped playing. It became a little bit more difficult.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's individual. I don't know. I mean, but that comes back. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you got to swallow your pride.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to realize sometimes what your role is in that situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
this leadership topic bores you. I can tell.
I don't know. Because I didn't go out there trying to be a leader.
I know.
You just...
Well, you know,
I wanted to play the game the right way, and I wanted to be respected by my teammates. And I would never... I know my teammates were counting on me, and I counted on my teammates. So I expect the same out of them. And then you play the game the right way, and the relationships you build is your leadership. It's not getting in someone's face. Everyone wants to say, you know, the leader is a guy that's going to go and get in someone's face. I saw an incident yesterday. Mm-hmm. Lindor is going to be a big-time leader. Mm-hmm. He is a leader now. Mm-hmm. But that, just because he did that, everyone's going to be like, oh, he's a true leader. Mm-hmm. He was a leader before that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have to get in people's ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, I think leaders are just, it's natural. You don't have to try to be a leader.
Well,
when you try to be a leader, mm-hmm. As a teammate, it's going to bother me.
And you've seen
when you
guys.
See people try
you
to
them?
Be a leader. Yes. When you try to be a leader and it's on, you don't have to do it. You just be yourself. A leader's a leader.
You just hit the nail on the head. See, that's what as soon as I said this bores you, you picked it up a notch. This is what I'm here to do, make you better.
Yeah. You just did. You're being a leader to me.
I kind of am. I feel like I'm the leader of the pregame show and the podcast. But it's true. Do you follow basketball?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Celtics had that exact situation. Kyrie Irving. So just because you're the best player, and just because you say I'm going to be a leader, does not make you the leader.
No,
and that was the case there. So
yeah, no, I have a problem with someone overdoing it to be a leader.
Yeah,
that bothers me in a sense. I'm gonna look at that person like you're not that person. Just be yourself, and maybe be like, hey, you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Just go play the game. Go have fun. Be yourself. Don't when you go out and try to do it, it doesn't work, and other people can see that and feel that.
See, you're good. You feel better about yourself now? You feel better like you've talked to this?
I mean, my God. I'm going to nail this.
I know. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm here for. Because I really don't have anything, because we've done, like you said, I've talked to you about Boylston Street and all this stuff.
I mean, I could talk about that for 20 minutes, too.
We talked about that. Your mom was there with you for three
days. Everybody was with my friends. Everybody was there having a good time.
This is, like I said, when you retire, if I can put on the headline, the king of Boylston Street, you are the king of Boylston Street. You are. Do you still have your place in Boston? You sell it?
No, I still have it. Yeah.
You're kidding me.
I still have it.
Is that where you're staying? No, you're not. I know you're not staying.
No,
you're renting it out, right?
Yeah. I've been renting it out for a couple of years now.
You're making money off of it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't keep it if I was.
Well, I mean, what a scam.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
It's on the market, though, right now.
Oh, so it
if
is?
If anyone is looking for I think it's.
You want to give me the
high-rise.
Give me the details.
High rise, Boston Common area by the State
that,
House.
That really nails it down.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
how many square feet?
It's about 24, I think.
Fully furnished.
Fully furnished.
What's the best part about it? What's the?
I mean, you got concierge. You got under parking.
Okay. No, I mean, come on. There's something like. What's the that the trapeze coming nice from the ceiling or something? Nothing?
You got to walk through to see.
Okay, all right.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Well, it's good because someone's going to Google this and say, vacant apartment, high rise in, near Boston Common.
45 Province. There you go.
Okay, 45 Province.
Yes.
How much? How much are you looking for?
Probably about 2.9.
To buy?
To buy. Yeah.
How much did you,
you
buy?
You got that. I can't tell you what.
Maybe
I
after
for
this
you
pregame
can look it
show.
Up. If you're good enough to look it up, you look it up. It'll tell you.
Are you going to make money off it?
I mean, that's the whole point, right?
Yeah, what's the point?
You make an investment when you buy
someone
something.
Someone who's tried to sell my house, it doesn't always work out that way.
No, well, you just got to pick the right times to sell it.
All right. Well, there
There's
you go. What else
are
you going to do? The thing we haven't. What are you going to do this? Mm-hmm. And then what are you going to do? What else have you been doing?
I bought a bunch of horses.
Oh, you did?
A bunch of
thoroughbreds. How did we not talk about this?
I did, down in Florida. I have some
in
running
Wellington?
At Gulfstream Park.
Oh, really?
Down in Hollandale, Florida. I have some in Jersey running at Monmouth. I actually have one at, you know what? As soon as I start the pregame show,
yeah.
I have a horse running at 6 o'clock at Gulfstream Park.
At Gulfstream Park?
Yes.
What's the name of the horse? Oh, my God. You don't.
I got 20 of them.
Oh, you do? You have 20 horses?
20 horses.
Is that what
Maybe
you were looking at
more.
Your phone when I...
Yeah, I was. Look.
All right.
I was looking at it.
All right.
We're going to go to it right now.
You have 20 horses.
20 horses.
What made you buy horses?
Younger, when I was growing up, my grandfather used to take me there.
Oh, really?
To the track all the time.
Are horses expensive?
They can be, yes.
What's the most expensive horse that you bought?
God, you put me on the spot, huh?
I mean...
My mom... I can't say that. My mom will reach through this podcast and strangle me if she heard that.
Your mom hasn't asked you that question?
No, she likes to go and be in the winner's circle, though.
How you win a lot? Have you won?
Yeah, I've actually won a lot.
You're going to have a horse that, like, actually gets to one of these big races?
But
they have, like, a 2-year shelf life to do it, don't they?
The horse's name is Mertz. Mertz.
Did you name that horse?
No, I did not.
Have you named a horse?
You can name a horse when it's born.
Okay.
And you raise it.
So you haven't named a horse?
No, I haven't named a horse.
Could you just buy him?
Eventually, I think I will name a horse.
What will you name a horse?
Oh, man. My Face. We can't really say why on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I won't tell the baseball bat story again either because your agent got mad at me.
But number six, Gulfstream Park today.
That's pretty good, though. That's cool. Yes.
He's a
6 o'clock
opening line 2-1. It's pretty good.
So favorite.
Yeah. Right.
How much will he win if he wins that?
Well, it depends on the purse.
What's the most money that? What's the biggest purse that you've won?
I was in actually a couple stake races. I want to say 2 weekends ago.
Okay.
One purse was for $75,000, and one was for $50,000.
$75,000.
Yes.
All right. How much do you get to keep of that?
You get 60% if you win.
You get 60%. The owner of the
then
horse.
How
much does a jockey go
jockey
for?
Jockey gets 10%.
Gets 10% of whatever they win.
That purse.
Do they get like any like flat? Like do they get paid by the hour or something?
It's what they win.
Only
they lose. I think they get $100.
Really? That's it?
They don't finish 1, 2, 3, 4. I think you get $100.
How about trainer? You got to pay the trainer.
Trainers and vet bills are.
Is it like what? Is it?
So you have to win in this business if you want to stay.
Yeah.
Afloat.
But you have 20 horses. You're gonna win.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not easy to win.
No, I know, but you have 20
horses.
I wish
I had the numbers I had. I got a pretty good percentage in the money.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's been fun.
Do you go every day?
No.
Do you go a lot?
No. I mean, I go, it's...
How often do you see your horses? Are you a hands-off owner?
If I'm home,
yeah,
I'm going to see. Well, I mean, I can stay home and watch it on TV if they're running in Jersey.
Yeah. Do you?
I've actually been up to the Monmouth. Won a couple...
So do you legitimately, you think, I mean, would any of these 20 horses have a chance at, like, being in one of these big races? Like, big races are the only...
I have...
What's your best horse?
I have some really good horses.
Yeah.
But I just claimed a 2-year-old probably a month ago that has potential to be really good. You know, I mean, you take a chance on a young horse, you never know, you know, how it's going to develop and be, but you never know. I mean,
I would kill to see you at the Kentucky Derby winning.
Oh, man.
You've been to Kentucky. I know you
haven't. You know what? One of my best friends got married on the Kentucky Derby this year, so I was kind of upset.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I let him know about it, too.
I see, that seems to be like...
I was so upset.
Right in your wheel. That's a straight ball right down the middle.
I waited 18 years to go to the Kentucky Derby. The first year I'm retired and my best friend gets married.
But you should only go as the owner of a horse to win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying, though.
I don't ever get into anything to be second.
Okay, all right. There. You know? Okay, there, Chief.
My God.
You aren't first, you're last, Ricky right. Bobby. Sure, but yeah, that's what I want. I just want to see you in the winner's circle wearing, I don't know. So like,
I will
like
have something really nice.
A top hat and like a monocle.
Yeah,
and a cane.
It would be a special
event.
And
on the top hat, at Bradfro Show, written in.
At Bradfro.
Yeah, wear your at Bradfro shirt. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good stuff. You feel good about things?
I do. You just helped me out so much.
All right. That's what I'm here for. All right. Thank you.
Yep.